S-A-B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby.
Shabba shabba. Shabba shabba. Shabba shabba.
Let me in.
Shabba shabba.
I want to be closer to you.
Shabba shabba.
Open up your soul.
Shabba shabba.
Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your mind.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. One of the things I get to do as an interviewer is seek out interviews of things that we normally don't get to listen to. There are a lot of albums and CDs that have interviews with the musicians on them. They generally don't play them on the radio because people tune into the radio to listen to music. So I'm trying to take the opportunity whenever I can to play an interview with one of the musicians that's included on their CD so that you get to listen to it. One of those interviews is Robert Nighthawk. It's from Live on Maxwell Street, 1964. And I wanted you to get a chance to hear it. So without further ado, here it is.
When were you born?
I was born in 1909.
What month?
November the 30th.
And where was that?
In Helena, Arkansas.
Well, when you were very young, did anyone in your family play music?
Well, all of my people played music.
What's the oldest song you know?
Well, back like Blue Before Sunrise, Mean Miss Streeter, Kansas City.
How does Kansas City go?
Well, the Kansas City blues.
And who made the first record of that?
Jim Jackson. He's out of Memphis.
This style is a lot different than.
Oh, it's not different.
And the slide, the way you play with the slide. Can you play a little slide techniques?
Well, I first started back in the 40s with that slide, and most of it was playing then mostly sentimental numbers. So here's a little bit of the song, heading for the last round up. That's a pretty thing right now. It'll go along right now.
Mm-hmm. Could you play a little blues with the slide and we can see how...
Oh, yeah. Play quite a few numbers with the slide.
The other style that you play, the faster, more modern style, that's you usually play with a pick or with your fingers?
Well, some with fingers, some with picks and first one thing. Like that. But the number now that's moving now is kind of stuff like BB playing.
Can you play the number?
BB's number.
What song is that?
Rock Me, Mama.
I've heard older versions of that.
It's been recorded 2 or 3 different.
Do you know any of the other ways to play that song?
No, I never did play it before BB come up with it.
When you were, of all the jobs you worked, is there one that especially stands out in your mind that something might have happened that was a especially memorable occasion?
Well, one of the worst things ever happened in my life concerned with the band proposition is one of my players got burned up.
What happened? How that happened?
Well, I imagine they'd been up all night and went in sleeping tired, I imagine, and I was caught up on burning him up. That was in 45. Okay. That's something that you'll never forget.
There's been...
And he was originally out of Chicago, born in Chicago, named James Blunt.
James Blunt, and
he wanted to go south with me, and so I take him. That's one of the worst things ever happened. You never get over them things.
I know in the blues there's been a lot of tragedies, like when Sonny Bill Williamson got killed.
Well, that was a player we used to record together, and that was something.
Dutch, can you tell me a little about that?
Well, that was it back, I think, long about 47, because I was broadcasting out of Arkansas at that time, and when I got the news, well, that was just a big shock.
What was the story?
And that's a long story. I never did find out how it happened or what it happened about or what happened.
Was he stabbed or shot? Or?
I think to say he was stabbed.
No one knows why?
No one had come up with anything.
Was he very much loved by the other blues singers?
Oh, yeah, everybody liked him.
Who would be about the most, that you can remember, the most popular singer, the guy that everybody really liked?
Well, you take Memphis Slim, I mean, it goes for him, and also Sonny Boy, and Walter Davis, Roosevelt Sachs. You take them guys, regular guys, Leroy Carr, people went for them.
Well, Leroy Carr was a pretty...
He was a real piano player, that's right.
When he died, I recall someone, they were making records, you know, memorial records to him.
That's right.
Did you, were you familiar with, were you friends with him, or?
Well, I just know him. I didn't know too much about him, but I met him.
Mm-hmm. Robert, you've been playing the blues all your life. What does it mean to you? I mean, what do you feel about the music? And
well, I think, what I really think about it, I think blues will never die. It'll always been the blues, and it always will be. You always come up with something else, but when it wind up, you'll wind up with the blues every time.
Why is that?
It's just something that you just can't get rid of.
You feel it?
You just can't get rid of.
Is there any particular song that means a lot to you?
Well, not in no particular number.
Do you think that the blues has changed a lot since?
Oh, there's a lot of change in them. They changed them, but it's still the blues.
Do you think the old style blues will still remain?
They're coming back. We used to record a lot of old numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The old numbers, I mean, it's more demeaning to the older numbers than the newer nowadays.
What do you mean? I mean, how is that?
Well, there's something about them old numbers, and it got that feeling there. Well, that's why it first started, and so it's just the best.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, I know a lot of blues singers don't play any religious songs. Do you ever?
Well, I never did. I never did go for it, I mean. Mm-hmm. I never like to try to work for 2 different men.
Mm.
I'm already working for the devil, so I'll finally change, maybe.
Well, listen, do you think that you know the rest of your life you're going to be playing blues?
I don't think I'll be playing. I don't think so. But I've been in a long time and got kids now coming on playing, and so I'm just, trying to get out of it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll finally get out of it.
Robert, where are you working now?
Well, different clubs now, like Pepper's and Turner's Place on 40th Street, Pepper's on 43rd, and 43rd and Wentworth. And we take in a Sunday over on Maxwell Street.
Why do you play Maxwell Street?
Well, that way, of course, fact about it, everybody's been playing around over there for years and years. Most of all music, most of they start right off from Maxwell Street, and so he wind up going back there. He meets a lot of musicians and gets a lot of jobs from Maxwell Street.
who are some of the guys that you play with down there?
Well, now we got Big John, he's harmonica blower, and Big Walter, he plays with me. And Jimmy Collins, drummer, he plays. We go down on Maxon Street, and then from there to other different clubs and things.
Do you enjoy playing on the street more than a club?
Not exactly, but you have more fun anyway on the street, look like.
How?
Well, there's so many different things. You can see so many different things going on.
There's some great dancing out there, I'll tell you that.
That's a lot of it. So that, I don't know, I get a kick out of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. When you're playing out there on the street, on the Sunday, do you have sort of more relaxation, more room to work?
Well, that's right. That's one thing, yeah, plenty of room.
Yeah, I mean, do you play the same material that you play in the clubs?
Not exactly.
What's different?
Well, when you're in the street like that, mostly the people, they got certain numbers they want to hear, and you get in a club, well, you mostly have to play what comes to you, whatever you... Because very few people ask you to play anything in the club. They mostly satisfied anything you play.
Mm-hmm.
But in the street, the people want certain numbers.
Well, old ones?
And some old and some new ones.
I guess I know when I was out there, people seem to enjoy it more in the street than they...
That's right.
Do you think that that eventually, you know, when Maxwell Street's ripped down, do you think they'll be playing somewhere else?
Well, they might find something else, might come up with something else.
Do they play anywhere else in the street in Chicago?
Not that I know.
Do they used to?
Not that I know.
Just on Maxwell Street?
That's the only place they ever know to play on the street.
I've heard stories that guys like Little Walter, you know, they got started out there.
Right on Maxwell Street. That's right.
Do you have sort of any idea why this street was the place that...
Well, that's a long story. I've never found out why. They always played on Maxwell Street.
Mm-hmm. When did you first come down on the street and start playing?
In 40.
And you haven't played since just recently?
Lately I went back to Maxwell Street.
Mm-hmm. Why did you just start coming back again?
Well, just looking up different players and different jobs.
Mm-hmm. Robert, the last thing I want to ask you is, do you ever sort of get a yearning to see your old friends again? The guys like Sleepy Johnny
Yates? Well, that's right. I always, you know, well, say I was in Florida. When I come out of Florida, I come back to run in on Elmo James and find out he was dead. So this one of them numbers. There's different guys you think about and you want to see them, you go back to see them.
Is there any ones in particular that you're really interested in seeing again?
Well, I visited Muddy Water and Earl Hooker. I mean, regular players and mm-hmm. Brooks and his band,
mm-hmm.
Johnny and his band.
Mm-hmm.
There's different bands, guys I know. I go around to see them. They mm-hmm. come to see me.
Could you just play one more song for us and sing a little? Anything you'd like?
Well, I'll kind of hit just a little bit of one of Ray Charles' numbers. What did I say?
Just before we go, could you sing a little of that, one of my favorite songs, that Hold That Train Conductor? Could you sing a little of that?
Well, I don't know about that one now. Voice a little bit out of shape there. But I'll give you a little bit of the old Kansas City. I think you'd like that there.
Very much.
This morning, feeling bad, thinking about the good time that I once have had. I'm gonna move to Kansas City. I'm gonna move to Kansas City, mama. Honey, why they don't lie you? And it's T for Texas, T for Tennessee. Old Weaver's got Mississippi, and the women wants me.
Friends, an interview with Robert Nighthawk by guitarist Michael Bloomfield back in 1964. You can find that on Live on Maxwell Street. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Terry Baum. And then, because it is the last Monday of the month, we have our Librarianistas du jour. So it's going to be a fun show. So stay tuned. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That was the Pointer Sisters and Salt Peanuts. It is 12:19, and as I promised you, we've got Terry Baum here to talk about the new show. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Terry, before we get started, tell our listening audience, like, how long have you been performing?
Well, I started in the first grade.
Uh-huh.
When the little girl who had the lead in the song, I got nervous and I took over.
Oh, wow. And you just jumped right in?
And then I feel like everybody starts out performing because we all start out playing different characters.
Mm-hmm.
We were children.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us stop, and I never stopped.
So when did you, so you say you never stopped, but when did you decide this is what I want to do? Did you decide right then when you jumped in and you loved it, or was
no,
it?
No. I thought I was supposed to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they tell all smart girls.
Okay.
But it seemed that I was always drawn to theater. That was what I really, where my passion was and where I felt my home was. So I got a BA in theater and then a master's in directing, and I just really never stopped. And also when I tried other things, I tended to get fired.
Well, then that worked out for you. It forced you into your dream job.
Right, yeah.
So do you prefer the performing end or the directing end?
I really haven't directed in quite a while.
Okay.
I would say essentially a playwright, and I have done a lot of solo performing, and I actually love, I never thought of myself as mainly an actress, but I have to say, I just love performing. It's a very joyful, deep thing to do.
Okay. So you mentioned that you were also a playwright. So when did you discover that you liked writing your own stuff as opposed to, you know, like pulling plays and performances from the ether?
Well, really, that's really because of my development as a feminist. Before I was a feminist, I was a director of whatever plays, mainly from the classical canon or absurdist theater. Mm-hmm. But once I became a feminist, there was nothing for me to direct. This was really in 1969 when I made that transformation, and so really my desire to write came out of my new understanding of the world and my desire to create meaningful roles for women that talked about women's issues.
Okay. Do you remember the first thing that you wrote, and do you remember the response that you got from the first thing you wrote, both, you know, critically and from, like, larger society, given that it was, you know, there was such a lack of feminist voices?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it's so funny you're asking me that, because I was just recalling this the other day, because I always saw myself as a visionary who would know what was the play was supposed to be about, and then we would improvise it.
Uh-huh.
And record the improvisations and develop the scene from there. But it was Moonlighting, a play on women and work in 1976 with Lilith Theatre. And I had this concept of a woman who was afraid of dealing with plumbing, fixing a broken toilet,
mm-hmm.
and the toilet being made of actresses, you know, who then were growling at her and at, you know, envisioning all her fears of breaking the toilet.
Okay.
And when we tried to improvise it, nobody could ever get it. I had a very clear vision, and so I wrote this one scene about, because I've always been terrified of fixing a toilet.
Okay.
That I would break it, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I wrote this one scene about this. It's these two women who are the workers in the factory, and they are approaching this toilet, which is made of three other actresses. And one of them says, no, you've got to fix it this time. You've got to learn how to do this. And the toilet is snarling at her. And anyhow, so this, it worked. The scene worked. It was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the very first thing I ever wrote.
So I guess then in that situation where you're trying to, you have this very, very clear, specific idea, how were you able to finally get to that part? Did you sort of act it out yourself, or was it just through constant improv that you were finally able to get it?
Oh, well, no. I mean, I have an idea. I have ideas. I know what should be written about.
Okay.
That's part of one of my abilities. I have vision. So I see what the story is that needs to be told. In 1976, when we did this play on women and work, that was a radical idea. There was this concept that women didn't work, even though it was completely untrue. So it was very, very strange, but that was the truth. And I said, let's do a play on women and work. So I was always that person who saw what the next project was.
Okay. And then when people who were not necessarily feminists heard about it, what was their response to it?
Well, we were defined as, we defined ourselves as a feminist theater.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nobody in the theater who wasn't a feminist and interested in devoting their energy.
That makes complete
to
sense.
These ideas.
That makes complete
there
sense.
There wasn't any lesbian or gay consciousness. We did this whole play about women in work and never talked about homophobia in the workplace and how it would affect women. I mean, we had three lesbians in the group, and the subject never came up, amazingly,
okay.
that we should do something about this. But in terms of what women confronted, we were very seriously searching for different ways to express that.
So then when did you discover, or when did you find your voice to be able to talk about queer subjects in theater and feel comfortable about doing it?
Well, when I became a lesbian. I wasn't a lesbian.
Ah.
And then suddenly I fell in love with one of the women in Moonlighting, this play on women and work,
mm-hmm.
and then really there was nothing at all that reflected my life. I mean, if it was hard to find parts that were reflecting the lives of women, once you get to lesbian gay women, forget about it.
Sure.
You know? So I obviously had to write about that.
And so what was the first thing that you wrote about as a newly minted lesbian?
Dos Lesbos,
okay.
played by, for, and about perverts, which I wrote with my collaborator, Carolyn Myers, who is not gay but has been my lifelong collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really about my life with my lover at the time, Alice Thompson. So she made a great contribution in terms of, I stole many of the things that she actually said in real life for my play.
Excellent, excellent.
And it was a pretty radical piece, and I think would be considered even radical now.
Very cool, very cool. So why would it be considered radical even now?
Well, we had a song about called Jill the Ripper, which was about a woman killing a rapist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's a pretty extreme thing to talk about. And we also talked about sex, our sexual lives, our relationships. And in a very sort of honest, kind of shocking way. Yeah.
All right. So now we're in 2025, and you've got a new play out, and it's called?
Lesbo Solo, My Gay History Play.
And did you write it?
Oh, yes.
And what is the field that you're mining in this one?
It is my experience of the dramatic change in the lives of gay people over the last 50 years. I have sometimes witnessed, been there when something really historic happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also I made history too, because Dos Lesbos inspired the first play by lesbians, the first anthology of plays by lesbians in the history of the universe.
That's amazing.
There weren't any plays by lesbians that had been published.
So was there a sudden explosion?
This anthology.
Was there a sudden explosion after Dos Lesbos came out?
Well, after the anthology came out, yes, Dos Lesbos, and I'm sure many of the other plays. I actually had two plays in the anthology, mm-hmm. and they were produced all over the world and translated into many languages.
Okay, so
it was a very exciting thing.
So, what are some of the historic things that you've witnessed? Because when you meet younger gay people, they don't necessarily have a real understanding of just how far we've come. So what are some of the things that you've witnessed that people now sort of take for granted?
Well, I was there at Phyllis White and Del Martin's actual legal wedding in 2008. That was a pretty big deal.
Okay.
There weren't very many guests at the wedding because it all took place in the mayor's office,
mm-hmm.
and included Phil and Del. It was the first legal gay marriage in California, and so Mayor Newsom. It was in Mayor Newsom's office, and they were there, and a few guests, not many, and then the press from the entire world with all their camera equipment was there, crammed into the mayor's office.
Uh-huh.
And another thing I witnessed. I happened to be at the second Congress to Unite Women in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, all the lesbians had been purged from a lot of the women's groups because they wanted to kind of sanitize feminism so that nobody would be disturbed by the idea that there was dykes involved.
Sure.
And the Lavender Menace took over this, which was a group of lesbians who had been purged from being in groups. They disrupted the Congress at the very beginning and mm-hmm. took it over.
Nice.
And from that time, from that moment, lesbians were an accepted and open part of the women's movement. I just happened to be there.
I love that story. I love it to pieces.
Yeah.
So are these some of the stories that we'll hear about in Lesbo Solo? My gay history play. So it's already started. What kind of response have you gotten from your audience?
Well, it's interesting. Very different responses from older lesbians and younger lesbians. It's a very important play to young gay people. It gives them a sense of their history, a joyful sense of their history,
mm-hmm.
and it's really they're very grateful. One woman wrote I always put out a comment book, and this one young woman said, I'm 25 years old, and I now have a better feeling about my future. And that for the older lesbians who were often the same place as I was, you mm-hmm. know, it's a validation of their whole lives. So it's a play. And of course, almost everything I do is funny. And this has a lot of humor in it. So people love it. They just love it.
Excellent.
It's a wonderful thing to do. I feel like I'm giving a gift to people when I do this. I really do feel that. It's very entertaining. It's very positive, and because it shows people triumphing again and again and again. So, and it begins with the very first play is in 1960. The first scene is in 1963 mm-hmm. when I'm in high school. And I'm in my class, and my teacher has a breakdown because there's rumors going around that she's a lesbian. And she's in danger of being fired for that. And then she, in the very last scene, is about her being, and of course she denies. She says, how could anybody think that I would ever do something so disgusting? Mm. But she really has a breakdown in class. And then 50 years later, I go to a Shabbat service at the gay synagogue in Los Angeles, which is the first gay synagogue in the world. And there's my teacher, Miss Pearl. She was a lesbian. The rumors were true. And here she is, an out lesbian and totally beloved as an elder in the congregation.
That is an incredible story, because she went from just being fearful for her livelihood to being out and proud.
Yes, and being surrounded by love, you know, and it was just, that's the beginning and end of the play. I hate to give it away, but the truth is, that is what we have gone through in my lifetime.
So for people who want to go see this play and experience the gift that you're about to give them, where do they go, when, and what time?
Well, you can get tickets at themarsh.org.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the Marsh in Berkeley, correct?
At the Marsh in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the next two Sundays at 5 p.m.
Okay.
And it's in downtown Berkeley, just like half a block from BART. And so it's very easy by public transit. And also, there's a lot of parking garages there in downtown Berkeley. So if you drive, you will find a place to park.
Okay. And if people want to find out more about what you're doing and upcoming things that you've got going on, how would they go about doing that?
They would go to liliththeater.com. LilithTheater.com. And that site is basically about my work.
Okay.
I am Lilith Theater at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So once again, for our listening audience, you are Terry Baum. Your show is called Terry Baum's Lesbo Solo, My Gay History Play. It's happening at the Marsh in Berkeley through October 12th on Sundays at 5 p.m. And repeat one more time where they can find out about what you're doing.
LilithTheater.com. LilithTheater.com. They could also Google my name and Lilith Theater will come up.
Well, Terry Baum, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
It was great to talk with you.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. The next couple of Sundays, you can go check out Terry Baum's show, Lesbo Solo, My Gay History Play at the Marsh in Berkeley. It's Sundays at 5 o'clock. I got the Librarianistas coming up, so stay tuned.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That was Trio and My Old Book from the album Trio. And speaking of books, I've got my librarianistas du jour in the house. I'd like to welcome Jaina Ray Cabrera and Julianne Randolph. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, DJ Marilyn.
So, you know I love the library, so I'm just going to have to let you guys roll. What's happening in the library coming up? Who wants to start?
I can start.
Okay.
So, next month is Filipino-American History Month, and I am the manager of the Filipino-American Center at the main library downtown. We have a number of events happening throughout the system for the whole month, but I wanted to highlight one in particular. We are having a Barrio Fiesta-style event on Saturday, October 11th, from noon to 5. We're calling it Bangon Kabayan, which means rise up countrymen, basically. And it's a big fiesta that's going to focus on the history of Filipino boxing in the Civic Center area.
Okay.
Yeah, so there will be a boxing demonstration, a cultural dance, a performance by Power Struggle, and we also have a small business marketplace, which I'll let Julianne talk about.
Okay. Take it, Julianne.
Okay. Thank you. I work as the Small Business Center librarian, and the Small Business Center is very proud to contribute a small business marketplace to the event Jaina just described.
Okay.
So we will have a curated marketplace of local Philam makers and manufacturers. October is also manufacturing month, so we're really excited to highlight these makers. We'll have everything from jewelry and illustrations to chocolate and flowers and herbal remedies. I'll just name a few of the makers. We'll have Handmade by P. McKay. She makes wonderful jewelry. Yeyitz Fika, who's a stationery sticker illustrator, designer. Kokak Chocolates, Diosa Blooms, which is a florist, and Other Ways of Seeing, which is a herbalist. And they all infuse their Philam culture, flavors, et cetera, into their products.
Very cool. I know that, like, especially with stickers, everybody loves stickers. Even if they don't know what they're for, they still just love them.
Oh, yeah. I have a collection of stickers, and they just kind of sit at my house. Yeah.
I was in Mongolia, and we gave out some stickers. And they, you know, were written in, you know, Latin letters because they use Cyrillic. The kids didn't care. They just loved them. They didn't know what it was. They just loved them. So a sticker is always a happy, happy occasion. What else is going on at the library?
So also in October for Manufacturing Month, the Small Business Center is going to do a small business spotlight of New Works, which is a local clothing company. They're a clothing manufacturer. They have three storefronts. They have an amazing story, though. They actually started 20 years ago in 2005 in a San Francisco apartment and have expanded to be a nationwide recognized brand. As I said, with three storefronts. So we're really excited to highlight their story and just, you know, the beauty of keeping production and design local, right? Think of all the jobs and opportunities that creates, you know, in the factories, in the retail spaces. So we will host the founder, Jen D'Angelo, in our Corrette Auditorium at the main library on Tuesday, October 28th.
Okay.
From 6 to 7:30 p.m. And she will be in conversation with the founder of Briar Clogs. They're a local clog company that are in the dog patch. So two local manufacturers will be in conversation together.
Very cool. Very cool. So how long have both of you been working at the library?
Yeah, I think it's been almost 9 years for me. I started out at the Excelsior branch and then moved to West Portal and then Ocean View, and now I'm at the main library with the Filipino American Center.
Very cool.
So it's been 9 years.
And how about you? How about you, Julianne?
So I have been working with San Francisco Public Library for just coming up on 5 years.
Okay.
I've been in my current role for about 2 years. But I worked as a librarian in other systems before.
Okay. What are some of the challenges of being a librarian in this climate?
Ooh.
That you can talk about.
Yeah. personally, I haven't had a lot of like specific challenges regarding like the current political climate. It's just the everyday challenges of working with the public can be a little tough. I don't think a lot of people realize that there is a lot of emotional labor that goes into being a librarian because mm-hmm. you work with so many different types of people who all come in with their different needs and mm-hmm. Issues. So it's a lot. It can be a lot sometimes.
I know when I go to the main library, I know there are a lot of people who are like unhoused or they're going to the library to kind of have a calm place to escape, but sometimes it follows them into the library. So I know right. that can be very challenging. How about for you, Julianne?
I mean, it definitely comes with challenges, but I will say, so like Jaina, I used to be a branch librarian, and when I left the branches, I really thought I was going to be like losing that community feel mm-hmm. that like a cozy branch environment creates. But I will say like our regulars, like we really build community with our regulars mm-hmm. and we're able to give them, like you said, DJ Marilyn, that sort of respite from maybe other conditions they're experiencing in their mm-hmm. lives. And that to me is very meaningful mm-hmm. and is something I look forward to experiencing each day that I go into work,
right.
Building that positive, safe community with them.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the library because I know there's tons of stuff that's happening and I know you guys are dying to tell me about it. So what's your next thing that you want to make sure everybody knows about?
In addition to the Barrio Fiesta I mentioned earlier on October 11th, we have a host of programs throughout the system, different branches. So we have weaving programs, we have food programs. We also have a lot of music and dance programs coming up at various branches.
Mm-hmm.
You can check our website, sfpl.org, and just type in Filipino American Center.
Okay.
And then all the events will pop up at the bottom of the page.
Very cool. Okay, top that, Julianne.
Well, so I have two events that I would like to plug. One of my colleagues who works in our international center at the main library is also contributing an event for Manufacturing Month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to give that a quick plug. Our Japanese librarian will be highlighting Sequoia Sake Brewery on Wednesday, October 15th from 4 to 7:30 p.m. at the main library. I will note that program does require registration, but if they go to sfpl.org/events, they can find the event and click to register.
And it does, and it's just to know how many people are coming and to reserve a spot, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Right. It's everything the library does is free. It's just so we can,
plan accordingly. Yeah,
exactly. So Sequoia is San Francisco's first and only artisan sake brewery. And so the founder will be sharing how they built their business using California grown rice and water.
Oh, okay.
And I also would like to highlight that the library's Business Science and Technology Department, which I work in, is planning Financial Planning Day, which will be on Saturday, October 18th from 10 to 5 p.m. at the main library. Our personal finance librarian, Jonathan, has curated this event. It's a full day of free expert advice on managing your finances and planning for the future. So there will be workshops in our Corret Auditorium. Those workshops will also be live streamed via Zoom in case people can't come in person. And if you come in person, though, you have the wonderful opportunity to meet one-on-one with a certified financial planner. So that's sort of your extra bonus. If you come in, you can get personalized advice.
Okay.
It's an amazing opportunity to take control of your financial future.
Very cool. All right. Now you, Jaina, have to top that.
Oh, my. Let's see. I can tell you a little bit more about the fiesta. So in addition to, like, we really want a lot of folks to come out to this. Again, it's about Filipino American History Month, which we focus on the struggles and also the milestones that happened in Filipino American history, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have the Soma Pilipinas Jeepney there for photo opportunities. If you're not familiar with what a jeepney is, it's like a World War II vehicle that's been repurposed in the Philippines as public transportation.
Oh, okay.
And they're usually really, like, really decorated with, like, bright colors and signs.
Like so, the old jitneys from the 60s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that will be there for photo opportunities. We also have Los Cuyas, the they call them the Phil Mex restaurant. Uh-huh. I think they have a kiosk at Stonestown, and you can also find them at the Heart of the City Farmers Market on Wednesdays.
Okay.
But they'll also be at our fiesta, so we'll have some food. And in addition to the small business marketplace, I forgot to mention that we will have a number of community organizations tabling as well. So along with the library, there will be the Philippine American Writers Association will be there selling books. Soma Pilipinas will be there. And Bayani Art, they just released a book about Pancho Villa, the first Filipino champion, boxing champion. And yeah, there's a lot going on that day. So I really hope folks come out and join us and be in community with us.
And if they want to find it online, how would they go about doing that again?
Again, you can do sfpl.org/events and just type in, well, it's kind of hard. You can just, I don't know if you can, it's called Bangon Kabayan. Mm-hmm. So you can, it's BANGONKABAYAN.
But they can just look, they will find all of those things on the Filipino events page?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And for your stuff, they'll find all of those things where?
Thank you for asking, DJ Maryland. So all of these small business related events can be found if you go to sfpl.org/smallbiz. Biz is B-I-Z.
Okay.
And you will find all of our upcoming small business events. You can also go to sfpl.org/events, and there's a topic tag for small business, so you can filter to the small business events, and then you can see a broader list. We publish events 2 months out,
okay.
So there's already a lot of events on there.
Excellent. And would that be a place where small business people could approach to maybe take part in a future program?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for bringing that up, DJ Marilyn. So yes, that's also a great place to go to connect with our Small Business Center. And you can always, our contact information is on there. A business could reach out if they have, if they want to join one of our programs or a future spotlight. And there's also ways to get involved with our workshops. We also offer mentoring. The Small Business Center is here to help folks get started with their ideas, navigate challenges, and we're also here to celebrate their success.
Excellent. Well, Jaina and Julianne, I want to thank you both for being on the show today. People of Earth, AI is not the way to go. Librarianistas are the way to go. You ask an AI, it'll give you some sort of answer. Maybe it's right. Maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know. But if you ask a librarian, they will help you figure out how to find out that information in a way that you can guarantee that that information is truthful. So once again, I want to thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you so much.
All right, people of Earth, it's time for me to ride off into the sunset. I'm going to leave you with some Pointer Sisters. You should take this message to heart. It's from the album Yes We Can Can. It is Yes We Can Can.